Right now, new discoveries are shedding light on an ongoing mystery: when humans first came here to North America and who they were. Gemma Tarlak is with us now for a look at the latest evidence and the ongoing story. She's a senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back.
Always good to be with you, Rob.
Well, Gemma, let's start with the questions we're trying to answer here before we get into some of that new evidence. So the questions, as I understand them, when did people arrive in North America? Who were they? How did they get here? Are those some of the key points we're trying to figure out?
Yes, that's exactly it. And what's really exciting is that we're getting more and more evidence from a lot of different streams, from geology, from glaciology, and most recently from paleogenetics.
And now, when I was growing up, to the extent I paid attention, my understanding was there was a time the climate was different. There was a land bridge across the Bering Strait from, you know, Siberia, you know, that special part on the risk board, Kamchatka to Alaska. And that's when people came over about 10-ish thousand years ago. Not necessarily what happened now, we're thinking, right?
Yeah, well, a little bit of that is right. So walk with me, if you will, back.
Not if there's glaciers. I'm not walking on those.
Well, no, let's go back about 20,000 years to Beringia. And that is the land bridge that is connecting what's today Siberia and Alaska. So they were once connected. There was this massive land bridge called Beringia. And during the last glacial maximum, when a lot of water was tied up in glaciers, this area was exposed. And it was, you know, it was not a bad place to live. It was probably warmer than it's been in Wisconsin most of this winter. And it was there was game, there was vegetation, there were fish in the sea. So it was an okay place to live and not nearly as extreme in terms of cold as you might think. And we know from previous genetic studies and some archaeological sites that a group of people moved from Siberia into Beringia as early as 36,000 years ago. And they stayed there for thousands of years, and they were loving life as the last glacial maximum, again, made this not a bad place to live. And it's from that population that we believe Native Americans and all the indigenous populations of the Americas, both North and South America, those are their ancestors, the folks living in Beringia. But the questions, like you said, remain, okay, who came over from Beringia? When did it happen? And how did they get here?
Right. And that 10,000-ish year mark that I mentioned, it sounds like that's probably wrong because there were people apparently in the, you know, southern South America and Florida by then, long before then.
Yeah. The 10,000-year mark has gone by the wayside a long time ago. You know, we have evidence, there's archaeological evidence of humans in Monteverde, Chile, as early as 14,000 years ago, potentially as early as 18,000 years ago. There is a site, a fascinating site, because it's actually an underwater archaeological site in a Florida river, and it's a mastodon butchering site that is more than 14,000 years old. We have found genomes of ancient Native Americans from Mexico, from Montana, all 12,000 years or older. So we know that definitely the first Americans had crossed over Beringia and were well into the Americas by well before 13,000 years ago, probably much earlier.
So I want to look at some of the various more recent evidence. One we've talked to you about a little bit before, the Kelp Highway. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, the Kelp Highway, it's a great name. I mean, it just gives me a complete mental image. And basically what they're finding, again, from a number of different disciplines, archaeology, biology, paleogenetics, they think that if you were, say, in a boat in Siberia and 16,000 years ago you just started paddling east, well, you could have made it all the way to what is now the western coast of the United States just by following the coast and not really leaving your boat to cross overland, but just following the coast, enjoying the seabirds, the fish, the shellfish, and yes, the kelp, that delicious kelp, you know, sustaining yourself with that and really getting everything you need either from the coastal ecology or from the sea itself. So they think that is actually the most likely route for these Beringian populations to have arrived in the Americas, because the overland route across basically what's now Alaska and much of western Canada, that was still covered up in ice and really impassable, inhospitable, until fairly recently.
So then that raises the question, if people came via the West Coast, maybe paddling along the way, The next question is, when do they start moving east?
Exactly, and that is the question that a lot of archaeologists, anthropologists, biologists, marine ecologists, that is the question that's obsessing them. Because, you know, the problem is, let's say you and your extended family were coming over in boats, and maybe you came on shore every now and then to build a fire. Well, whatever site where you built that fire, that site's now underwater. So it's really tricky to find archaeological evidence of this kelp highway hypothesis. But that's not stopping them. And in fact, there's a new wave of research underway specifically to look at those underwater archaeological sites and hopefully find evidence of those, you know, brief camps that people might have used while they were crossing over on the kelp highway.
So Gemma, if I'm hearing this right, I'm imagining a group of scuba-trained archaeologists. I mean, I'm joking, kind of, but that's presumably that's what's happening, right? Because they're underwater.
Yes. Well, I mean, there are a few ways to do it. You know, there is technology where it's easier to see underwater, to test, say, substrates underwater, to look at the submerged rocks and actually the seafloor, looking for potential signs of human settlement. But there is a sub-discipline of underwater archaeology, which is fascinating. And, yep, these folks put on their wetsuits and sometimes their cold suits, and they go down underwater, often in very difficult environments, and they find incredible things. That site I mentioned in Florida, the mastodon butchering site, it's actually in really swampy water where there's zero visibility. And I talked to one of the folks who's one of the archaeologists who's done the work, and she said, you know, you really can't see in front of your face, and every move stirs up sediment, but yet they were able to find all kinds of tools and bones that showed butchering. So it sounds kind of crazy. It's very difficult, but it is possible.
We're talking to Gemma Tarlak from Discover Magazine, looking at the latest science on when and how people came to North America. And Gemma, one of the most recent things I'm reading about now is DNA evidence of someone translated from the local language in Alaska called Sunrise Girl Child. Can you tell us about her?
Yes. A little over 11,000 years ago, she passed away. She was only 6 weeks old, and she was buried with a couple other children who died very early underneath the hearth of a home in what's now Central Alaska. And scientists have been able to reconstruct her entire genome. And this gives us a lot of fascinating new information, but one of the most important things to emerge was that she appears to be part of a population that we did not know existed. And they're calling it the ancient Beringia population. And basically, these were the people who were living in Beringia and then moved into Alaska and died out. They were not direct ancestors of Native Americans. So it's this new population that we don't know a lot about. And I want to be a little bit cautious because I know there were a lot of headlines about this, but this is a single genome. And it's, you know, it's tempting, but it's difficult to draw broad conclusions about entire populations from just one genome. But what I'm excited about, quite frankly, is that scientists are adding more and more of these ancient Native American and First American genomes to research and building a database, and that's super important. And what I love about it is it's coming out of increased collaboration and cooperation between the researchers and the indigenous communities. You know, for a long time, you may remember with Kennewick Man, there were lawsuits. It was very ugly. People in Washington State were fighting over who had the rights to this ancient 8,000-year-old fossil, the ancient 8,000-year-old individual that was found in Washington State. It was very ugly, but I think researchers now are understanding that, you know, these are someone's ancestors, and we need to treat them with respect, and we need to talk to the people who are most likely descended from them and work with them rather than at odds with them. So I think every new genome that is added to the research database is fantastic. I think it's wonderful that people are more and more interested in this area.
What's the next piece of data that you would be hoping for, Gemma, to answer some more of these questions?
Well, you know, speaking with scientists in this field, I've heard murmurs that we will be hearing about a couple new sites in the coming year. There are a few sites, such as Triquet Island, which is on the west coast of Canada, that looks very promising in terms of potentially confirming some of the kelp highway hypothesis and potentially being an archaeological site that goes back far enough to show that people were traveling by boat. And, you know, the next huge discovery is always a shovel away. And I think more and more people are focusing on this area. It's certainly heating up in terms of interest and the number of excavations. And I think we're going to be hearing some really fun stuff in 2018.
And Gemma, I want to revive a bit of an argument you and I have had in the past. You probably know where I'm going. I say it would be cool if we had like a time machine or even just a time camera and we could just get definitive answers. You don't want that. You don't want the easy way. Not that time travel is easy, but.
Well, it's not that it's easy, but, you know, and this is going to sound terribly hokey, but I really think that in the process of discovering scientific truths, we discover something more about ourselves, too, as a species. And if we're just kind of handed all the answers, well, that's terribly boring.
I respect that. I guess I could go along with that. Also, I don't have a choice. We don't have the time machine. Gemma, thanks a lot. It's always a lot of fun to talk to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to chat with you again.
That was Gemma Tarlak. She's senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. We've been talking a little bit about time travel, but mostly about the still unanswered questions of how and when humans first came into North America and some of the latest evidence and discoveries.